Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Peter Jacobson. You know the name? I do, because when we started this radio show 13 years ago, they said, who do you want as your first guest? And I said, on that first show, we got to go big. We got President Obama on the show. You know who else we got? Peter Jacobson. He was the first guest, and he joins us now. How are you, sir?
I'm good, John. Yep. I'll cherish that till the day I die.
I only bring it up to remind you. Like I said, hey, we got to get somebody who resonates. You know, commentator on the Golf Channel, PGA Tour, won 7 events on the tour, and, you know, 2 events on the Champions Tour, and a guy everybody in the state of Oregon knows. So we went with Peter Jacobson.
Well, being on the docket with President Obama, that is high praise, and I appreciate that.
We got so much to talk about. Patrick Reed, yeah. I find him hard to root for, and I know that... you know, he's been going through some stuff, but I got to give him credit. He is focused, because amid all that, he goes out and wins.
What's amazing about Patrick Reed, obviously I've been in the game for over 40 years, and I pay attention to these young guys that come on tour because it's my job. When I'm working Golf Channel and NBC, we need to know as much as we can about these young kids coming out, like Victor Hovland, who just won yesterday in Puerto Rico, and Colin Morikawa and Matthew Wolf, these new kids. Well, a few years ago, probably 6-7 years ago, this kid Patrick Reed, he was Monday qualifying over and over and over again. He was open spot qualifying for these PGA Tour events, which is very difficult to do. And he kept getting in, and he kept playing well. So I kind of checked in on this kid, watched him hit balls, watched him play. He's a bit shy. He and his wife, Justine, are out on the golf course, kind of to themselves. And then when he broke through and he won the World Golf Championship at Doral, and he stated, I'm a top-5 player in the world. I went to him, and we did a Jake's Takes a couple of weeks later where we kind of had some fun with that. And I found him to be very enjoyable, easy to talk to, very playful, and a lot of fun. Well, as we've seen, he has a history of challenging moments in his golf career. Now, it's highlighted in the last couple of years. Remember in 16, he and Jordan Spieth teamed at the Ryder Cup to become Captain America and the new kid on the block, Jordan Spieth. They were undefeated. They were great together. And, again, everybody really had a hard time with Patrick Reed because they said he was unlikable. He's a hell of a golfer, hell of a player. And I've never seen a player play so well through controversy. He was accused of cheating down at Tiger's event down in the Bahamas last fall. He went to the President's Cup, took all kinds of crap from players. And what did he do? He went out and won his singles match. And just recently, Brooks Koepka was criticizing him for cheating. Just a couple weeks ago, what does he do? He goes down to Mexico last week, and he wins the World Golf Championship. So the guy loves to be backed up against a wall. He loves people to take swings at him. And he seems to play better whenever he feels like he's under somebody's spikes. So I give him that credit, but quite a dichotomy. You think in golf, you really want people to be on your side, rooting for you, pulling for you. But Patrick Reed, he seems to play better whenever he's questioned or he's under some sort of controversy.
You know the dynamics of the tour. You've been on it. You've been around it. You've been around this, you know, for the greater part of your life. I find it interesting that players are speaking out against him, and they're willing to say, "I don't like the guy," or "He's, you know, or he's a cheater," or "I've seen him do it." It sort of strikes me as counterculture to that locker room mentality where, hey, we privately say that, but we don't publicly call out. Why do you think people have been so publicly outspoken about Reed's play?
Well, I get into this quite a bit on my Jake's Takes podcast, which is coming out tomorrow. But when I was back on tour, when I started over 40 years ago, there was an atmosphere that existed in the locker room that if you stepped out of line, if you did something wrong, if you said something wrong, if you cheated, or there was a perception of cheating, there were some of the older players that would sit you down and point a finger in your face and say, "We don't do that." But that doesn't exist anymore, because the players today pretty much exist in a bubble. Everybody's got a posse. Everything you see in the NBA or the NFL where players are walking around with their agents and their media consultants and their physical fitness gurus and their nutritionists, that exists on the PGA Tour. As a result, these players live in a bubble. And as a result, you don't really have a player that's maybe in his upper 40s sit down and say, "Hey, don't do that. Stop that." But you're right. It is whispered about. Players did question what Patrick Reed did at the Bahamas, which in my mind was very questionable, what he did to improve the lie there, the waste area in that sandy area. But you're right. For Brooks Koepka or Cameron Smith or any player to come out and publicly criticize another player, you really don't see that done on the PGA Tour today.
Peter Jacobson is with us. You can catch him on the Golf Channel. He's also got a podcast, as he mentioned, Jake's Takes. You should check that out as well. Peter, the rule, play the ball as it lies. Explain that for people who are casual golfers or maybe are on the fringe of this as a sports fan who doesn't understand how egregious that would be in golf. And in your time, what did you do if you were playing alongside somebody and you saw something like that?
Oh, I would go right to the player and I would stop play right there and say, "Wait a minute, what happened right there?" And I'd call in an official. Basically, in the rules of golf, you're supposed to play the ball as it lies, unless you're in an area of ground under repair or you're in a water hazard or you're somewhere where the lie is in question. But if you're under a tree, I actually played last week here in Naples and I hit a ball off the fairway and it went up under some trees. And it was actually on exposed tree roots. Well, you don't get a drop for that. You've got to play it. Now, you do run the risk of injury if you hit down on it and you pull a muscle or you do something to a ligament in your wrist. You can damage yourself, but that's the way golf is played. And in Patrick Reed's situation, his ball was semi-buried in a waste area. It wasn't a bunker, so there was you could ground your club. Whereas in a bunker, you can't ground your club, as you know. But in this waste area, he grounded his club and he took kind of a mini practice swing and it kind of brushed the sand away from behind the ball. He did it twice. And it was clear to me, it was clear to the viewers that some part of his lie was improved. And then it allowed him to play it out. So was he cheating? Was he running right up alongside of the rules? Sure he was. Now, you always give the player the benefit of the doubt. Maybe, I don't know if he knew what he was doing, but as Koepka said, he was building castles in the sand. A lot of players will joke about that, but the reason you call a rule or you call a penalty on another player is if you have that player's card for the day and you're playing with him, you're protecting the field. So, yeah, if I see somebody break the rules, and it happens a lot of times inadvertently, you have to stop play, call an official, and discuss it with that player.
Really interesting, I think, because golf, too, it's a rule where you call a penalty on yourself, right? And it's supposed to be a game of integrity. Looking across sports, we got the scandal with the Astros, PEDs in baseball, cheating going on everywhere, Spygate, Deflategate. I feel like it's everywhere, Peter, at this point. Has it always felt that way to you, or is this new?
I think this is new. Don't forget there's so much money in sports, and I know you touch on this in your show every day, and it's getting that way in the game of golf. there is so much opportunity out there for players to basically make their career with a good year, winning a couple tournaments or winning the FedEx Cup. You can make your career. So I think players, if they're pushed, I think maybe they will do something like cross the line. I hate to admit that, and I don't think it happens much in golf. I really don't. But it's fun to watch an NFL game or an NBA game when a player is holding another player's shorts and the referee doesn't see it, and he gets away with it. At least in golf, the other players you're playing with are protecting the field. I've got your car, John, and if I see you do something wrong, if I see you tee off ahead of the markers, that's probably inadvertent. If you ground your club in the sand, that's inadvertent. But I do have to point it out to you, and I hope that you're going to do the right thing and call the penalty on yourself. But I think in golf, cheating, it's so rare. You really don't see that, because I believe that the players understand the integrity of the game and how important it is to protect the rules.
Peter Jacobson is with us. The story goes that you qualified for the PGA Tour in that first attempt, 1976 qualifying tournament. Can you think back to that kid in 76 and project him into this world with the money that exists today, the ambition and the pressure you would have felt to get on the tour at that point?
It's funny. I had no idea what I was doing. I came out of University of Oregon. I wanted to get married to my wife, who's sitting just to my right. I knew I wanted to play professional golf, but I didn't know if I could make it. I went down to Brownsville, Texas. I got my tour card. I went out my first year, and I really didn't know what I was doing. But fortunately, I was smart enough to keep my mouth shut, my eyes open, and listen and learn. And the money wasn't that great back then, but as players like Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer always kidded us, the money then was huge compared to what they played for. And now, when I'm out hanging with these kids today, the money, I always say to them, wow, this is what we played for back then, and this is what you're making. But I don't begrudge that of the players today, of any sport. I think these players are great athletes, whether it's golf, baseball, football, basketball. And in the world of golf, we're seeing greater athletes. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're mentally prepared, physically prepared to win and to dominate their sport. You look at Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. So it all started with Tiger Woods. These guys come out, they look like they could play in the NFL or in the NBA. So I give them all the credit in the world.
You obviously, as a guy who played at a high level, third in the PGA Championship twice, U.S. Open top 10 finish, you had celebrities and politicians that probably wanted to play golf with you. What's that like when you're out as a pro and you're playing against somebody who kind of dabbles, but they're famous in their own sport? Maybe it's another sport or politics or acting.
Well, it's very interesting when you play with actors. I played with Jack Lemmon at the AT&T for years, played with Chris O'Donnell. We all know him from NCIS. Is that what it's called? NCIS LA or something like that. Huey Lewis, Darius Rucker. I played with Clint Eastwood and Toby Keith and all these people. All they want to talk about is golf. All they want to do is improve their golf game. Whereas I'm fascinated by acting. Don't forget, I won the U.S. Open in Kin Cup. Nobody ever remembers that.
That's right.
I should put that on my resume, but the USGA doesn't recognize that. But I'm always fascinated by what goes on outside the ropes. I've been fortunate enough to play with probably three or four presidents, and I love to talk about the political world and what's going on around the world. When you play with a president and you have a chance to talk about these things, it makes you realize how small you are and how insignificant playing professional golf really is when you look at the global view of politics and all the people and problems in the world.
Which presidents did you play with?
I played with Gerald Ford, played with both President Bushes, played with Trump before he was president, and Bill Clinton. Played with Bill Clinton. So what's that? Is that five?
That's five. How many? Who is the best golfer? If we're having a tournament with those golfers in their prime, who's winning that thing?
I would say it's probably a toss-up between Trump and George W. Bush. They both can hit it. They both can hit it really well. I played with Trump at the Bob Hope Classic years ago when he was just a celebrity. I played with George W. Bush. Ben Crenshaw and I hosted his mother's 90th birthday party up in Kennebunkport, Maine, a couple of years ago. And, man, we had a fun round of golf. We had Jeb and Ben Crenshaw and George W. and me. And George W. just wanted to have driving contests every hole. And we kept knocking it by him, but he kept walking by his ball. He was for sure the longest off the tee, but came to realize he was the shortest off the tee.
We've got Peter Jacobson with us. Before I cut you loose, what happens with this Patrick Reed thing is, if you could get in his ear, what would you tell him?
I'm not sure that anybody could tell Patrick anything at this point. I think he's proven to the world of golf that no matter what's happening in his world, whether it's controversy with cheating or controversy with back when he was in college, I don't think anybody could do anything because he seems to excel and get better when he's under some microscope of controversy. So I actually like Patrick. A couple of years ago at the Open Championship, I was walking the course at Birkdale where Jordan Spieth had that incredible comeback. And I was coming down 16, and I walked in with Patrick Reed, and he challenged me to some chipping contests. And so I was hitting his wedge, and he was hitting his wedge, and we were chipping and putting, and we were laughing and joking. And I beat him a couple of shots, and he beat me. And I find him to be really likable. I really enjoy him. So I don't know what I could say to him. Maybe just, Patrick, just make sure you don't ground your club or improve your lie. It'd go a lot better for your public persona.
Don't you think it would be good for him to get out and let people see that side of him that you saw?
I do, and I think he tries. I just don't know if it's in his nature. Don't forget, it's hard to find players out there on tour that are like Fuzzy or Trevino or Chi-Chi that really want to step out and give. Mickelson does it. Ricky Fowler does it. So I don't know if Patrick Reed has that club, quote-unquote, club in his bag to be able to step out and do that. But I would love to do some outings or some clinics with Patrick and maybe try to bring that out in him, because I definitely think there's a very special person in there. He's clearly a special player, but I think there's something in there. I think there's more in there that we could see from Patrick Reed. We just have to somehow pry it open and get it out.
All right, Peter Jacobson, I really appreciate you. Your Ducks basketball teams, I think the women are going to the Final Four. You should be there for that in New Orleans. I think it's going to be a fun time. And then you got the Masters right after that.
Oh, it's going to be great. The women's women's team is incredible. The Oregon men's team is frustrating. I think when you have five players on the floor, you got to develop more than one scorer.
Yeah.
And I know that Peyton Pritchard might be the player of the year in college basketball, but that's one of the tough things to do is when you have a great player like Peyton Pritchard, you've got to put other scorers around him because you don't play well every night. And that's the one thing when Oregon's lost, men's team, they've lost because the other players on the team just haven't developed their offensive ability yet. But, man, Dana Altman, is that guy a great coach or what? He gets so much out of his players, and I'm hoping for a really good run to the tournament for the Ducks.
They're always dangerous in March. They are. I mean, it's just something to what he does with them. Peter Jacobson, I appreciate you making time for us. Thank you, man.
You got it, John. Talk to you later.
All right. Check his podcast out, Jake's Takes. Find him on the Golf Channel as well. Interesting stuff with Patrick Reed. I have a hard time liking Patrick Reed. You know, and you can tell by the way people are speaking out, calling him out, that he's not well regarded in that locker room, so to speak. Air quotes there. But what a great point that Jacobson makes about it's become so big. There are two things going on in professional sports, maybe across the spectrum. It's become so big, there's so much money involved, that everything is hyper magnified as far as the potential to earn. And so, therefore, the shortcuts are amplified, right? PEDs. You can justify it. There's so much money. Take a shortcut. There's so much money. A win in a tournament versus a loss, a stroke versus a two-stroke penalty. It becomes amplified. But he also raised the idea that along with that money becomes the individual athletes, whether it is a NBA locker room, NFL locker room, Major League Baseball, golf, tennis, doesn't matter. They're like these little corporations. And this isn't new, but it's Patrick Reed, Inc. It's Damian Lillard, Inc. It's CJ McCollum, Inc. It's Myers Leonard, Inc. It doesn't matter. Peyton Pritchard, Inc. Yes, they're on teams in some respects, but who's in their ear telling them, you know what you should do? You need to get out publicly right now and own this. I think Patrick Reed, it would help him to go out and do some interviews instead of being so defiant. Yeah, he's winning, but I think it would help his case and quiet things down if he just came out and go, yeah, I could see what people are talking about. I've got to watch that. Or I made a mistake, own it. That two-stroke penalty he took in the Bahamas, he sort of reluctantly took the penalty. He should look, go back and go, I realize how that played with people. I should have just taken the penalty. It was wrong. I think he's got to own some of that. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he likes it. Some of these guys like the controversy. Maybe he likes sort of the noise going on around him. It helps him bear down. Maybe he's used to chaos. He's grown up in it. Maybe it's his story of origin there. Chaos around him. Focus better on the golf with all the noise around me. Some people focus better when there is chaos around them. You think about people that you know who seem to generate controversy around them. Ask yourself if maybe they're just more comfortable, admit it. Maybe they grew up in it. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. Punch It audio coming up. You'll hear Sabrina Ionescu's entire memorial to Kobe Bryant as well. Later in the show, we'll play Who Got Smoked? Somebody will go to Reverence Barbecue. Sabrina Ionescu, you'll hear her talk about Kobe Bryant later in the program. We'll talk about Oregon State's struggles in basketball, men's and women's, down the stretch here. Can one or both of those programs turn it around? Also, the Trailblazers. What's the rest of the season going to be like for the Blazers? I watched and paid attention to boxing on Saturday night. I was checking my phone. I was eager to see Deontay Wilder defeat Tyson Fury. Not because I love boxing, but because I love America. I'm no communist. I love this country. I wanted the heavyweight champion of the world to be from the United States. And I saw images of Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield ringside in Vegas. I mean, for crying out loud, it's the boxing capital of the world, Vegas. Any meaningful boxing match is held there. And you had Tyson Fury from the United Kingdom, who came into the ring on a chariot, raised throne, wearing a robe and a crown. And you had Deontay Wilder from the United States of America in a hardscrabble story of a guy who was working like five jobs and living out of his car, just trying to find his way. I wanted Wilder to win. I know he's not the more skilled boxer. He's the bigger puncher. But I wanted him to win for America. And I looked at the rankings of the contenders after the match. Fury was the better boxer. By the way, he's 6'9", 273. If you're 6'9", 273, and you live in the United States of America, you're not boxing. That's the problem we have in our country. That's why, while we once dominated the heavyweight division, it's not for us anymore. It's almost like we've declared, hey, we're going to take our best athletes, we're going to put them in the money sports, and if somebody's 6'7 or 6'9, they're not boxing. They're playing left tackle at some college, hoping to get into the NFL. Or they're playing in the NBA and they're a power forward. So I keep thinking, what would Tyson Fury have been? He would have been the left tackle for the Packers. That's what he would have been if he grew up in America. But instead, He wins, and then immediately after, because they're contractually obligated, like this was Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder 2 that went to Fury. There's a part 3 as part of their contract that is they're contractually obligated. Like they have the option. If Wilder wants to fight Fury again, which I think he says he does because he likes money, that he gets to fight again. But here's the problem. I looked at the rankings of the challengers. All right, who are the best heavyweight boxers? You got guys like Anthony Joshua, also from Europe. And in fact, 3 of the top 4 are from the United Kingdom. And I'm thinking, like, this is their sport. This is their time. Because if you're 6'9", 273, or 6'6", 250, you're not growing up in England going, I want to play for the Green Bay Packers. You're saying, oh, I could be heavyweight champion. Soccer's probably not my thing at this size. I think there's an issue going on for America there. It's almost like the United States Boxing Association should form an academy where they select kids who are great athletes, good genetics, and go, all right, you know, I know you can make a ton of money in the NBA, maybe, or another sport, football. We need you to box. We need you to box for your country. And I thought it was a little shade, as the millennials say, at the end of the match when Tyson Fury broke out in a rendition of American Pie. Did you catch that? Did you tell me if this qualifies as shade? He's from the UK. He's just defeated the Great American Hope. And this is what happens.
I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widow bride. Something touched me deep inside the day. The music died all together now. So this will be the day that I die. Now, did you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mother's soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Well, I know that I'm in love with you, because I saw you dancing in the gym. We both kicked off our shoes.
That's shade. Am I not? Am I right?
Yes, and that reminds me of when the Beavers played Shout at the end of the Civil War.
That's right. I got to give the guy credit. I kind of like Tyson Fury. Like, he's got charisma. He's got moxie. And they showed, before the fight, they showed video of Deontay Wilder. He was suited up, shadow boxing. He's had his hands taped, everything. And then they cut to Fury as part of the pay-per-view, and he's in slacks. He's still in his dress slacks. He's walking around like he's not even ready. I thought Wilder might get him, but I realize now it was my American heart. I wanted the heavyweight champion of the world to be an American so that boxing could feel like it was real again. Problem is, our future heavyweight champions are preparing for the NFL, or they're going to the combine. I mean, can you imagine? You could go through every NFL locker room and you could pick out guys that you could go, all right, that guy, that guy. Can you imagine LeBron? If somebody had grabbed LeBron at age 13 and said, forget basketball, man. You could be a star, no doubt. Could own the world. Billionaire. But instead, your country needs you to box. You telling me LeBron couldn't have become heavyweight champion of the world? Like with his athleticism, like, you know, that's what I'm talking about. Keep telling people it's done for us. The only shot we have as a country to develop a heavyweight champion is almost accidental. It's got to be somebody who's got a history like Mike Tyson that wasn't right for the NFL, couldn't exist. Like without boxing, he would have been in prison. That's the only shot we have. It's that narrow a path.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.